Summer is here, and if you're lucky, you'll have time to read a good book or two. Today, we'll help you make the most of that time with recommendations for your summer reading list. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's time for our summer book show. Whether you're looking for scientific exploration, captivating memoir, or an opportunity to get lost in a novel, we have something that will make your to-be-read list. We'll get reading recommendations from Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, and Susan Schaefer, owner of The Bookshop in Boone. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Summer is here, and it's time to carve out a few hours or a few days to get lost in a good book or two. This hour, we've got recommendations to help you make the most of your time this summer. Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here. Hello, Jan.
Hello.
Hello, Paul.
Hi, Charity.
And Susan Schaefer is with us today. She's the owner of The Bookshop in Boone. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Charity.
Welcome
to the
show.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, guys.
And now The Bookshop in Boone, it's been open since 2008.
Yes, ma'am.
So you've been around a while now. And I also saw on your website that you even have a bookstore dog.
We do. It's actually my daughter's dog, and she's only here about Mondays and Wednesdays now. But we have two pure white cats, if you go on our Facebook page.
Oh, nice. Very nice. And you have a lot of used books, but you also have a new inventory as well.
Yes, ma'am. We have both new and used.
Wonderful. All right. Well, we're going to get started with the lists because I know you've all put together long lists and we're going to have to work hard to get through them in the hour. And Susan, since you're new, let's let you go first.
Oh, why, thank you so much.
What's your first pick today?
It would be A Week at the Lake by Wendy Wax. This actually doesn't come out officially until next week, on the 23rd. It's about three friends who met, in New York City 20-some years ago and just really got to know each other, liked each other a lot. They bonded. They started going to one of the gals' cottage. We're talking a 30-room cottage on the lake for a week every summer. And then all of a sudden, lost contact. Emma, who's the one whose family owns the cottage, just kind of dropped off and didn't contact people, didn't say anything, and no one ever knew and then why this would happen. And then one year they got an invitation to come back. And there were a lot of reasons why she did this.
And probably a lot of stories to uncover, a lot of secrets
stories
to share.
Oh, my gosh, secrets and stories and, yeah.
All right, sounds like a very good beach read.
It is a good beach race for us. Fairly, it's not terribly intricate, but
right.
a lot of secrets going on there.
All right. So A Week at the Lake by Wendy Wax. And Paul, I'll let you go second today. What's your first pick?
My first pick is a book by Bruce Eric Kaplan. And if you ever read The New Yorker, you will definitely realize his cartoon style. He's a cartoonist. Looks like he's always drawing in marker rather than
drawing with his non-dominant hand, maybe.
Yeah, maybe with his non-dominant hand. But he's always been very, very funny. And he's from New Jersey. And he began writing it's a very short memoir, just consisting mostly of little stories. Remembrances. I'll give you an example here.
So short vignettes from his
life.
Yeah,
they're two sentences long. Neither of my parents ever exercised. Not once. That I know about. I didn't know anyone who had parents that exercise. And this is so, if someone's dad had ridden their bicycle down the street when I grew up, that would have been
the weirdest thing, right?
Absolutely.
So it speaks to you.
Yes. And he talks about being his father having a they discovered in the basement a my father had a secret toupee. My brothers found it once in a little box in the basement. It looked like a bird's nest. He never wore it. I think he ordered it through the mail. Then, when it arrived, tried it on once and never had the nerve to wear it. He was very self-conscious about being bald. He had two or three long strands of hair that began at the left side of his head and traveled over to the right side of his head, so there would be hair on top. He still looked bald. But I guess in his mind, he had come up with a way of tricking people that he wasn't, I guess. On a windy day, it looked bizarre. And this is every one of these things you will relate to.
Right.
Everyone, and it is, it's a great bathroom book. And it's also, you know, you can go through the whole thing in 2 or 3 hours. So you don't want to use it all up. But that's my first.
All right. So that is I Was a Child by Bruce Eric Kaplan. It's memoir, but humorous and bizarre.
And it can, be very sad, too. It's an interesting book.
All right, Jan?
Are we doing fiction or nonfiction, or does it matter?
You know, I think we're kind of all over the place already. So.
Okay, well, maybe because Paul did something humorous, I should too, because I think if I'm going to follow it up with one of my fiction picks, they're not funny. So all right. I'm going to talk about Bettyville, which is the memoir by George Hodgman, which came out this spring and has actually had a fair amount of attention because it's about it's a memoir, and George is a gay man, middle-aged, sort of late middle-aged, and he has decided that he's going to go back to his hometown of Paris, Missouri, which is not a big town, because his mother is old and not dealing with her house very well, and she's just lost. She's just alienated the person that was living with her, or, you know, the help that she had. And so she's like – so he goes there hoping that he can convince her to go into assisted living. But really what happens when he gets there is that he realizes he wants her to finally accept him as he is. And she may be at the point where she can. But there's also just all this amazing detail about interiors from, you know, from the 1950s and the way she lives and the way she still wants to be.
He's got a great eye.
He's got a great eye. And obviously she influenced him a lot. I mean, he is aesthetic. His aesthetic sensibility is not different than hers.
Interesting.
And so so it's really a very moving book. But also very funny.
All right. And it sounds like that would speak to a lot of us at a certain time of life.
Yeah.
All right. That's Bettyville by George Hodgman. And Susan, we'll come back around to you.
Okay. Well, my next one is actually an older book, but they have just re-released it again. And Hallmark actually has a movie this Friday called... Murder, She Baked, I believe is what it's called. It's The Chocolate Chip Cookie Murder by Joanne Fluke. It's the first book in the series. And Hannah Swenson is a postdoc student that comes back home to Lake Eden, Minnesota. Very small town, far enough north that you must plug your car in during the day. It's not a maybe. Makes me thankful for Iowa winters. Her father has died recently, so her mom has all this extra free time. Her sister's married to the local sheriff, and Hannah opens a bakery slash coffee house called the Cookie Jar. And everything's going fine, you know, small town life. There's a lot of that in there, and I love that because we live in a small town. But suddenly, her milkman, milk delivery guy, is found dead in his truck behind her coffee house, and he has a bag of her chocolate chip crunchies in the seat next to him. And so she's obviously the last person he saw, and she becomes kind of a suspect, and she doesn't like this. She doesn't like the notoriety that maybe her shop might get in this investigation. So she starts poking around on her own. And, of course, her brother-in-law's not happy about that, but she does it anyway. And it's just, it's a lot of small-town life. It's funny. It's a cozy. There's no graphic violence. I mean, the guy gets shot in the head.
How do you spell her name? Is it F-L-U-K-E? Or?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. And this is the first in a series that you're talking about, which is there are 18, right?
Yeah.
And
Double
so
Fudge Brownie's the latest one.
I'm curious, is this the kind of series, I know a lot of people who have read this series and really thoroughly enjoyed it, is it the kind of thing that you could maybe share even with a teen reader, like if you wanted an audiobook for a big long car trip, something like that?
Yes, you could. A teen would be a good book for someone that age, yes.
All right,
but they're
great.
Clean, no cussing, no sex, no horrible violence, anything like that, and they're funny. And maybe you show them a different point of view.
Right. Make them think a little bit. All right. Well, that sounds great. So that one, you're talking about The Chocolate Chip Murder by Joanne Fluke, which is the first in this series. And there are many, many books in that series now. And Paul, we are back to you for number two.
Okay. I've got the final novel before he passed away of American novelist Kent Haruf, H-A-R-U-F. He's the one who wrote Plain Song, Eventide, Benediction. They're books that have gotten a huge amount of press and they've won awards. This is a very short book, but I don't think it's a book that anybody had to reconstruct from his notes or anything like that.
So it was completed when he died.
It's about two old people and they're kind of lonely, and an older woman comes to this older man's house. They've always known each other. They're in a little town. They're in Holt, Colorado, and she comes over and she says, "I have a proposition for you." And he says, "Well, what do you want?" And she said, "I would like you to come over to my house and sleep in my bed with me." And he gets incredibly very nervous about this, but she has there's nothing about sex in this. It's not about sex. She wants someone to talk to. She wants someone. Their lives are coming to their last 10 years or so, and she wants someone to tell stuff that she has never told to before. They didn't tell to their first wives because they were quieter and things like that. And it's just the people in the little town all notice it happening the first night it happens, and they just say, "Heck with that." This is working as a thing for us.
Sounds like it would tug on your heartstrings.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
And it's small town stuff.
Yeah, we have to take our break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our Souls at Night by Kent Haruf was Paul's second pick today. Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Susan Schaefer, owner of the bookshop in Boone, with me today. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our summer book show today on Talk of Iowa. We're getting recommendations from some of Iowa's independent booksellers. Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here, along with Susan Schaefer, owner of the bookshop in Boone. And Jan, we are down to you again. It's your turn for your recommendation.
Okay, I'm going to recommend this novel called Jam on the Vine, which is by LaShonda Catrice Barnett. And it is a... it's a story about a woman named Iva Williams who is born in Louisiana in the Jim Crow South, not too long after the Civil War. And her parents are really beautifully portrayed in this book. They're named Lemon and Ennis. And Lemon is from a Muslim background. I mean, she came over from that part of the world. And so she still practices her Muslim religion, even though her husband Ennis is very very Christian, and yet they are very tolerant of each other and wonderful parents, and they're dealing with the kinds of things that people dealt with in the Jim Crow South, which is horrible working conditions for white people, so that it's hard to know whether their lives are actually better than they were before the end of slavery, but Ivo is the daughter, and she's a child when the book opens, and she's a reader, and she's always hiding under the covers and reading, and you know, when they're wanting her to do work. And she eventually gets a scholarship to an all-black college in Austin, which is based on a real all-black college, and decides that she's going to move to Kansas City after college and start a black newspaper. Wow. And that's what Jam on the Vine is. Mm-hmm. And the newspaper moves from being what was considered accommodationist, not really militant, mm-hmm. to becoming more militant as she gets more confidence and sees more what's going on. And it's a really amazing book. And she, the author actually has a PhD, I think, from Syracuse or something in black journalism.
Interesting. Well, so it's a novel, but it sounds like also very based in historical and fact. And
right. But
so
not
an opportunity to learn something while also getting lost in a novel.
And you really can get lost in it. It's not academic at all. I mean, sometimes, you know, someone that has a background mm-hmm. like that can't just
let it go.
Yeah. But she can. And I really recommend this book.
Oh, it sounds fascinating. All right. So that one is Jam on the Vine by LaShonda Catrice Barnett. And Susan, we're back around to you.
Okay. My book is The Same Sky by Amanda Eyre Ward. This book came out February this year. It's told in two parts. There's a couple that lives in Texas. They're part of a famous barbecue family. They have a business, and they're just totally busy from the time they open till they run out of food. Very, very popular restaurant, but they can't have children. Haven't been able to. They've looked at adoption, and every time they have, it's fallen through. The other part of the story is, and I think probably the stronger part of the story, is about Carla and her two younger brothers. Carla, when the story opens, is actually six, and her two brothers are one-year-old twins. At this time, her mother takes off for America. They live in Honduras. And her mom takes off for America to work and send money back. And so the children live with grandma. Well, 5 years later, mom has sent back money to have one of the boys taken to America to live with her, but hasn't gotten enough for the other two. Yeah. Grandma dies. The gangs are coming in, encroaching. Carla can't figure out, you know, how to protect them. And Junior is the youngest. He's six now, I believe. Carla's 11. And she decides that she's going to go find mom. And this is about, the whole book is about journeys, emotional and physical, and the struggle to survive and to find a place, find out who you are and where you belong in the world.
Fiction, right?
Yes, it is fiction.
It's a novel. Okay.
It is a novel, yes.
But similar to the last one, I mean, also sounds very like much. It's based in reality.
It is. It makes you think. Makes you grateful for what you have.
All right, so the same?
She has a hard journey. She does make it eventually. And they do actually dovetail the stories at one point. But Carla's story is the one that really gets to you.
The Same Sky by Amanda Ward. Thank you so much, Susan. And that brings us back to you, Paul.
Okay. Unusually for me, I have two biographies on my list. For me, biographies are only good if you're interested in the person. And the first one is Oliver Sacks. If you don't know who Oliver Sacks is, he wrote a book called
then
The Man Who
You're
Mistook
Missing
His,
Out.
Yeah, he is the most literate, humorous, articulate neurologist who ever lived. And he is dying now, and he announced that he would be writing a memoir about a year ago, and here it is. And it's called On the Move, and you think that Oliver Sacks, with all he's done in his neurology, would have plenty to do, but he has an incredibly – in the first place, he just barely got his medical degree. The very last chance he had, he passed by one point. But he was a nationally known motorcyclist and a weightlifter, and – He was gay, though nobody knew it, and had an active gay life. And he taught himself how to play the piano very well. You know, you just can't believe the stuff in this guy's life. And he writes always beautifully and always compassionately. And it makes you want to try stuff hard that you've never tried before, because he just had a wonderful life. He's not dead yet.
Right.
You can still read him in the New York Times on occasion. But the book is called On the Move, A Life, and it is such a pleasure. You're just going to be surprised.
All right. Oliver Sacks surprising us still after surprising us for so many years. Well, and since you said you've got two that one's memoir, not technically biography, but you have two of those on your list this year. So why not tell us about the other one, too?
Okay. The other is a memoir as well, and it is a memoir of the great contemporary composer Philip Glass. And I give him credit for making contemporary classical music not sound horrible and screechy and ugly. That was an enormous task, because many composers were determined that they should make us like this stuff. He was a kind of a prodigy, and studied with the incredible Nadia Boulanger in Paris, and the 50 pages of that as a set piece is just an amazing thing. But what he did that was so different was he went down to India to study with Ravi Shankar, and he learned everything he could from that kind of music. And he had no sort of snobbishness about Western music as Nadia might have had. And then he went to Africa. He has a couple of albums with a guy named Foday, F-O-D-A-Y, that are amazing, where he plays piano and the African guy plays his African instruments. This book is, again, if you like music, see, there are plenty of people who cannot tolerate Philip Glass's music. If you're one of those people, you're going to hate it.
You probably wouldn't be drawn to pick it up anyway.
But anyway, those are marvelous books.
All right. Words Without Music by Philip Glass. We were also talking about On the Move, A Life by Oliver Sacks. And Jan, we will come back around to you.
Well, so maybe I'll do a couple memoirs, too.
All right.
I've got Odd Woman in the City and the City by Vivian Gornick.
And she was a guest on Talk of Iowa not very long ago.
Yeah, she was in Iowa City actually for the whole spring, although she normally lives in New York and prefers New York.
She will tell you if you ask her.
She told us that on the show, yes.
But, you know, she is sort of a beloved writer. She has a memoir about her relationship with her mother called Fierce Attachments that's 30 years old that's still read and taught constantly. And this book is a book that she worked on for a very long time, and that changed direction as she worked on it, because she was thinking it was going to be about being a woman who had chosen to be single and live in New York City, both without a lot of money. I mean, she says, "I'm lucky that I don't need things," you know.
Right.
And so, then she thought it was maybe going to be about this relationship that she has with this gay man and their friendship. And it is a lot about that. It's about their conversations. But what it really turns out to be is about her chance encounters on the street in New York. And they're amazing. They're amazingly vivid. And they resonate with what's going on in her life or with her thoughts about her life. But they give her a new perspective on what's rambling around in her mind. And so it's almost like reading, you know, it's like a really good essay is in some ways like a poem. You know, you read it and you can reread it because you want to go back and see how that particular incident, You know, there's one in which the doorman to her building, she has just seen this guy, this homeless guy on the street, go into a rage because he wants money, and the person gives him food instead, because of course the real issue is.
Right.
And so she tells her doorman about how this homeless person went into a rage when he was given food. And the doorman says, you know, my father once slapped me upside the head for the same thing. I gave someone a hot dog at a baseball game that couldn't afford one. And my father said, what is wrong with you? You don't buy a man a hot dog without also buying him a soda.
Oh.
All right. That's Odd Woman and the City by Vivian Gornick. Did you have another memoir?
And the other one is a very different. It's called Lord Fear, and it's by Lucas Mann that was
also just on the show.
Oh, was he on the show?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know he was. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and he, you know, he actually worked at Prairie Lights when he was here briefly, when he was getting his MFA in nonfiction. But it's a long book about his looking into the death of his older half-brother who died of a heroin addiction. But it's very journalistic. It's very subtle and very moving in the way that it allows that it – I mean, he doesn't make any assumptions. He tries to interview people that had known his brother and really is never going to know him. I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to. But it's also about knowing his parents and – how his the brother's mother is not his mother, but knowing his father and his half brother's mother's reaction to this, which is also not melodramatic at all, just very sort of closely and subtly observed, and so it's a really beautiful book.
And yeah, I was blown away by it myself, and it defied all expectations.
Yeah.
I think when you describe what it's about, you expect a different experience,
right? Yeah.
And it's a far more enjoyable experience than you have.
Yeah,
because that you really
because
have.
He's able to come to to celebrate this life, no matter what it was.
And he didn't fall into a lot of the pitfalls that you very easily could have fallen into, I would think. Yeah, it was fascinating. So Lord Fear by Lucas Mann. And we have a few more minutes before we get to our next break. Susan, what's next on your list?
Well, actually, I have a young adult book, or more like a new adult book. It's not for the younger teens. It's by Sarah J. Maas. It's the first one in a new series by her. She did the Throne of Glass series, which was very popular here. It is set in a fantasy world. The Fae actually exist. Humans had been enslaved by them for years. They had a war, and now there's a wall, an invisible wall, separating the humans in this tiny piece of land, and the Fae have the rest of the world, pretty much. None of the humans, let's just say they're not doing well. Subsistence existence.
Mm-hmm.
This younger daughter is the whole sole provider for their family. She hunts, skins them, cooks them for some reason, kind of a Cinderella thing. I don't know what's with the other one. Dad's kind of gone a little crazy. He does a little carving once in a while, but not much else. The other sisters are pretty useless. She's out hunting one day, and she kills this ginormous wolf. It turns out to have been a fae, and one of the fairy people come to demand retribution from her. And as reparation, he can kill her right away, or she can go live in exile in fairy. Now, fairy is...
So she enters a magical realm.
Yeah, so she goes there, falls in love, actually, with... one of the fairy lords there. And there's a lot of political shenanigans going on and deceit and all this business. They send her home, and she realizes that in sending her home, they're going to take her boyfriend, not really boyfriend, because her beloved, I guess you could call him, under the mountain, and he's going to be killed. And their whole court, this has been a plot, this nasty lady's been working on for 49 years, excuse me. And so she goes back into fairy, and with some help from some of the other courts, there's a lot going on.
I actually saw this book, Susan. I saw this book on a list of books for people that or for teenagers who have run out of Harry Potter and still desperately miss it.
So. There's a lot of magic going on. There's shape-shifting. There's a lot of court intrigue and things going on that are alluded to but not spoken of directly. So it's rather intriguing. It's not for everyone.
Right, right. But it sounds
it is not for younger teens either. There is definitely some sex in it. Not graphic or anything, but definitely not for the younger ones.
All right. So maybe high school, upper junior high.
Yeah, 14, 15 and up at least.
All right. The Court of Thorns or A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Susan Schaefer is here today. She's owner of the bookshop in Boone. Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. They're all sharing their summer reading picks with us today. And of course, once we compile this list, we will put it up on our website, iowapublicradio.org, later today. So if you failed to write something down, and you can find it later. So join the conversation. Listen for more great summer reading suggestions. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, it's our summer book show on Talk of Iowa, and we're getting picks from some of Iowa's independent booksellers. Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here. Susan Schaefer, the owner of the bookshop in Boone, is also here, and I think that brings us back around to you, Paul, for another pick.
Okay. I've got a novel this time. The title is Boo, which is the name of the main character. And it's by Neil Smith, who is a Montreal writer, although it is definitely written in English. It's not in French.
All right.
Yeah. This kid is just sort of a nerdy 13-year-old, and one of the things that he likes to do is work on memorizing the periodic table of elements. And every chapter starts with an element.
All right.
And he's memorizing the elements one day when he's in front of his locker. And all of a sudden, he's in bed somewhere. And turns out he's died and has no notion at first as to what this might be. But he dies and goes to a world of only 13-year-old boys.
That doesn't quite sound like heaven to me.
No, no. not to me. But the first little bit of it begins. Do you ever wonder, dear mother and father, what kind of toothpaste angels use in heaven? I will tell you. We use baking soda sprinkled on our toothbrushes. It tastes salty, which comes as no surprise, because baking soda is a kind of salt, notice sodium bicarbonate. You never worry about toothpaste in heaven, do you? After all, you are agnostic. But even believers seldom ponder the nitty-gritty of the afterlife. Thinking of heaven, they imagine simply a feeling of love and a sense of peace. They do not consider whether the pineapple they eat here will be fresh or come from a can. We actually receive both kinds, though certainly more canned than fresh. Turns out all these boys live in it's kind of a dormitory thing, and their life, he keeps changing, shifting gears, and everything is amazing to you. There will be sometimes objects will appear that have meaning from their past, but they are given no explanation. And the people who are in heaven are left to ponder
why that object
is there. And it's not obvious, and it isn't always solved.
Hmm.
And the It's hard to describe, but this is a very profound book.
You know, it's listening to you describe it, I clearly understand that you love it, which makes me want to read it. But if I just read that description, Paul, I don't think I would ever pick it up. Who is it for? Is there an idea of what audience it's trying to reach out to?
Okay. In the past 5 years, I've probably sold 300 copies of a book called Memoirs of an Imaginary Friend. And this book is beloved by all. It is exactly for those people.
Okay.
And it is for people who think about their childhood. It is for people who ponder what happens to us. It is for fans of Kevin Brockmeyer, one of my all-time favorite writers.
Kevin. Yeah.
Well, and Kevin Brockmeyer, also a past guest on Talk of Iowa. You should do a lot of podcasting after this show.
Yeah, right.
And he wrote about being in junior high.
Oh, yes, he did. But
a
he also
few moments
wrote several
of radiant
books about
film strips.
Yes, yeah. Yes, okay. Yeah.
About being
in seventh
and about
grade.
What
right.
happens
yeah.
after you're dead. I mean, this is one of the things that and when you get a really smart person pondering this, you really have a good time.
All right. Okay, you've sold me, Paul. Boo by Neil Smith. Jan, it's your turn.
Well, I actually have two very different books that feature teenagers too. And I'll start with the one that's more – neither of them is actually particularly lighthearted, but the first one is quite funny, and it's a collection of short stories. And it doesn't always feature teenagers, but a lot of the speakers are. And it's called Me and My Daddy Listen to Bob Marley, a novella and stories by Ann Pancake. And she is from West Virginia. And there aren't very many writers from West Virginia.
Or named Pancake.
Well, actually, her sister is an actress. I mean, well, anyway.
Okay, did. Apparently that's more common than.
But, like the first really long story in the book is told from the point of view of a teenage girl who has a job at a movie theater, and she spends her time either being a popcorn girl at this movie theater or hanging out with her retarded uncle. And having an affair with a boy across the street. And I'll read a couple of sentences so you can hear her voice, because her voice is what's really amazing. One popcorn girl fringe benefit was a pass for two to any showing at the Alexander Henry Theater. Jamie usually took her mentally disabled uncle. During the movie, the two of them would get drunk on Southern Comfort she'd smuggled in a pimento jar and mixed with a Sprite that they'd buy at concessions. Jamie's favorite spot was the first few rows, where she felt swallowed by the screen. But Uncle Bobby insisted they sit in the back row on the aisle for the quickest exit in case of fire.
And, oh, that's great.
That is a lovely, lovely
and,
detail.
Well, she's a really good writer, and I know that sounds a little
a pimento
possibly
jar.
Grim, but she's very – I mean, this girl is very self-possessed, even though she's young and experimenting.
All right. Me and My Daddy Listen to Bob Marley, Novellas and Stories by Ann Pancake. And you said another
– Well, this book Paul's read too, and it's getting a huge amount of attention, and it's also told from the point of view of a 14-year-old, I believe.
Yeah.
The Book of Aaron, which is a Holocaust novel by Jim Shepherd, and it's very historically researched too, and it's about this group of 200 children who were taken to Treblinka from an orphanage. They were orphans to begin with, and they were thrown out of the Warsaw ghetto and taken to Treblinka, and then they meet this man that is, you know, whose life is focused on saving them, and you never get to hear it. So he's sort of the whole focus of the novel, and mm-hmm. it's a short novel, and it is beautiful.
I mean, it's nicely written,
and you know, incredibly sad but not tragic, because it's redemptive,
mm-hmm. and not exactly like all the other. It has differences that are different.
Well.
The regular Holocaust novel.
Yeah, because this man who made it his life's work to save these orphans and, you know, get them out and give them a life is real.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sort of strange thing about the strategy of the book is that you never hear anything from him. He's only observed.
Mm-hmm. It's
sounds powerful.
It's very good. It's a little book.
And yeah.
But not little in
scope and
yeah. I mean, you know,
and effect. Yeah. Right.
I mean, do you think it's like Anne Frank? Not really.
No, I don't think it is. Well, the main character is so different.
The main character is very different. Although some
he's such
of the,
a wise guy.
Yeah, he's a really yeah, and but some of the observations are the same.
Oh,
although
yeah.
his
style
and yeah. perception of them is much, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. The Book of Aaron by Jim Shepherd. And we are back around to you, Susan.
Okay. Well, my next book is actually a science fiction book. It's called The Martian by Andy Weir.
Oh, I love that book.
Isn't that a good
We're
book?
We're selling a lot of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. There's a movie coming.
And Matt Damon, I believe, is who they told me is supposed to be in it.
Yeah.
That can only mean good things. That's good.
Yeah. This book was originally published serial style on his website. And then in 2011... they did an electronic version of it, and then just last year, Random House picked it up and published it in print form. It is about a Mars mission set in the future, not too far though, and they had I'm sorry, my phone is about to die on me. Gosh. oh, dear.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Oh, don't worry, Susan. So The Martian by Andy Weir, which everybody who's read it that I've heard of just adored it. So
it's really good. It has good science in it. The author has said the technology that is used is all here. They just kind of tweak it a little bit to make it a little more efficient for the book. The main character, Mark Watley, I believe is his name, is an engineer botanist, and he...
All right, and I think we've lost Susan. I was going to say goodbye to her before her phone died, but Susan, if you're listening, thank you so much for being on the show today. And of course, we'll share Susan's list. Susan Schaefer, the owner of the bookshop in Boone, and we are nearly out of time anyway, so we are going to have to pick up the pace a little bit. I know this is the most challenging part of the show. Paul, what do you have next?
This is another former interviewee of yours, Michael Perry. Have you read this one yet?
I have not.
It's called Jesus Cow, and most of his books are sort of little memoirs, and he has a voice that you just can't help but laugh at. He is just a funny, warm guy. And Jesus Cow is one of those circumstances. The main character is a farmer, and the cow is born, and there on the cow's side is Jesus Christ. And you all know what Jesus Christ looks like. He's that guy that is on people's walls, you know.
We've seen many images of him, yes. But not on cows, but...
And so he has to prepare for what he knows is going to happen, is everybody's going to be making a big deal.
Right.
And like all of his stuff, it turns out to be very funny and interesting as well. I absolutely recommend him and this book.
All right. Michael Perry, The Jesus Cow. That is on my to-be-read list already, so a double recommendation there. Jan, what do you have next?
Well, since Paul did The Jesus Cow, I thought I could do The Shepherd's Life, which is this book by this this English shepherd named James Rebanks, and he is from this part of the Lake District, you know, where Wordsworth is from in England, and his family has had this land and been shepherds for 600 years. And when he was a kid in this very rural place, they quickly decided which kids would go to college and which kids wouldn't, like they do in England. And he was in one of the groups that was not going to. And so his life was going to be relegated to being a shepherd, which is really what he wanted to do. But then one day he picked up a book and he started reading. And he studied himself for the A-levels. And he got into Oxford. And he got 2 degrees from Oxford. And then he decided to go back and be a shepherd.
Oh, wow.
And so this is his...
How's he not going to write a book?
Well, first he started a blog and a Twitter account, which did so well that he has a book. But it is really beautifully written. And he has, you know, a ton of references to Wordsworth and to literature. I mean, he is what a shepherd should be.
Yeah.
A very, very literate shepherd.
Yeah, he's – well.
So If, I mean, the Anglophile in me already wants to read it, but would you say people who love and fondly remember James Herriot would love this? The, you know, All Creatures Great and Small,
it's
the
more
vet stories?
It's more sophisticated, I think.
But not, I mean, I think if you were a James Herriot reader, you could read it. I think it could go both ways. I don't know if you ever read The Meadow by Jim Galvin, which is about, you know, a land in Wyoming. And so, like, James Herriot would be on one side and The Meadow would be on the other, and The Meadow is probably a little more sophisticated, and so those readers would like this, and so would the James Herriot
right.
ones.
We
so
can all meet in the middle.
Yes.
Perfect. The Shepherd's Life, Modern Dispatches from an Ancient Landscape by James Rebanks. Is that?
Yes, that's
all
right.
All right. And Paul, we've got 2 minutes left. You've got 1 minute.
Okay. Aquarium by David Vann. A girl living with a single mom goes to an aquarium in Seattle. She's about 12, spends her time living sort of a life among the fish. The book is beautifully illustrated with fish, which, oh, you're on the radio. You can't see them anyway. But she comes to be friends with an older man who, like in his 70s, who seems to be in it for what she's in it for. But, of course, there is much more to the story than that, but no, it's not what you're thinking.
All right.
But it is one of the most powerful and intense novels I have read this year, and I have read it twice now, which
you
is
read it twice.
Very rare for me.
Wow. All right. Paul has read Aquarium by David Vann twice. Should write that down.
Write that down.
Right. All right, Jan.
Well, I'm going to just end really quickly with this book that I bought, another book on the Jackson Pollock mural. But it's actually a really good one because the mural right now is in Venice.
Right.
And so this is the catalog to the show in Venice. But it's written by this art historian who's named David Antrim. And he's apparently, you know, one of the leading authorities on the period of art that Jackson Pollock is from. And so it has more details in it about the painting than I had ever read before. And especially interesting is all the stuff about the way it looked in Peggy Guggenheim's foyer, where it was, you know, because it was
right. Like,
it was made to be put there, and the way it affected the painters that went there and saw it, and how much different it was to see it in that space than to see it, you know, in the spaces that it's been seen since. And so then he goes into, you know, he talks a lot about how it influenced Rothko and Clifford Still, and in ways that you wouldn't suspect. And, you know, it's pretty fast paced. It's not dull.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of three books, at least, that are fairly new about mural right now. There's a novel. There's the account of restoring it,
which is also really good.
Yeah. Oh, all three of them are great. So, well, I haven't read this one yet. But obviously, mural is having an amazing moment yet again. Who knew? All right. That one is Jackson Pollock's mural, Energy Made Visible by David Antrim. And we're out of time. I know that you still have books left on your list. We'll throw them all up on the website when we get the list compiled at iowapublicradio.org. Jan, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Jan Weissmiller. And Paul, thank you so much.
You are such a classy person to be interviewed by. I love coming
all
here.
All right. Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Susan Schaefer was also with us today, owner of the bookshop in Boone. We'll put that list up online at iowapublicradio.org. And, of course, we'll also post it on our Twitter feed and our Facebook page when it's up there. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.